And I'm not mad, because it's a reminder to me that I can keep going. I appreciate it. So look that song up on YouTube and watch the video. It's pretty great. I'll be reading John 14, 15 through 21, and this is our gospel passage. So please stand or take whichever posture works best for you in honor of the gospel. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. And I will ask the Father, and the Father will give you another advocate to be with you forever. This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees Spirit nor knows Spirit. You know Spirit because the Spirit abides with you, and the Spirit will be in you. I will not leave you orphaned. I am coming to you. In a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me because I live. You also will live. On that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. They who have my commandments and keep them are those who love me, and those who love me will be loved by my Father, and I will be them and reveal myself. I will love them and reveal myself to them. The word of the Lord. It is time for our junior worship. So if you are of that age, mentally or physically, you are dismissed. Jesus loves me.
I'm going to use this mic today because the lapel mic was making a funny sound during class that was distracting for everyone, or for me at least, so we're going to try this instead. Good morning, everyone. I'm so glad to be here with you in this space this morning, and I love that line that we read from Acts, God is not far from each one of us. In the end, I think that's all I'm trying to say today. God is not far from each one of us. So, a few words on our gospel passage. And Jesus said to them, I will not leave you orphaned. Nearly 30 years ago now, though for whatever reason, I have never forgotten it, I sat in my apartment in York, Nebraska, and basically convinced myself that we were alone in the universe. Not theoretically alone. I think I still believed in God, you know, in that way that you believe in the mountains of Oregon, even when the clouds and the rain hide them from you. But emotionally and spiritually, I felt I had somehow slipped through a crack in creation and landed in a place where God stopped noticing. It was one of those really glamorous spiritual moments that involves sitting on the floor, eating peanut butter straight out of the jar with a silver spoon. And it wasn't even good peanut butter, as I recall. It was that creamy kind with all those hydrogenated oils and no crunch. I prefer the natural kind that you have to stir like mixing concrete, you know, and has the crunches in them. And when you're feeling down spiritually, you'd think at least your peanut butter might taste good. Anyway, I had this whole speech going in my head as I sat there in my apartment. Nobody understands the questions I have. Nothing is clear about any of this. I tried explaining all this to a couple friends who, to their credit, were sympathetic for me, but not sympathetic with me. I guess I'm carrying this all by myself, I said. It was magnificent self-pity, almost poetic. I could have won awards for it. It was so good. And right in the middle of this, my neighbor, this construction guy who liked to listen to Alanis Morissette's album Jagged Little Pill on full volume every single night, my neighbor started practicing piano. Not concert hall piano, not gifted prodigy interpreting Chopin with emotional awareness, nothing like that. Just this guy repeatedly playing the first lines of, and the song was, wonderfully, the first lines of Let It Be, as if he had just met the song and the piano about 15 minutes ago. That's what it was like, if you can imagine that, over and over. He'd play the wrong notes, stop, sigh, restart, and I remember feeling superbly annoyed about all of this. Because when I'm feeling abandoned by God, I really want God to give me some large cinematic sign in the universe. I want Morgan Freeman's voice from the clouds coming at me. I at least want a burning bush. Or maybe I'd even settle for a worship song with one of those minor key modulations in the final verse that really gets me emotionally stirred. What I do not want is my neighbor banging out Beatles fragments through this shared apartment wall. And yet, that guy, he just kept on playing that line over and over. And then, weirdly, and certainly without my permission, that moment became oddly transformative for me. Now, I'm going to come back to that scene in just a moment. I just wanted to introduce it to you. But first, I want to say a few words about Jesus' words today. In John's Gospel, Jesus proclaims, "I will not leave you orphans," which is, of course, a lovely statement. I will not leave you orphaned. But also, if I'm totally honest about the passage, it's also just a little bit troubling, because it sounds like Jesus is saying, look, I'm leaving you all, but don't worry, I'm going to connect you with, you know, customer service here in just a minute. Someone from the divine help desk is going to be with you shortly. And given that we all know what it is like to be put on hold, particularly after waiting so long in the first place for someone just to pick up. If you've ever tried calling Ziply Fiber for anything, where the odds are, at best, 20-80, anyone will ever pick up the phone once you're transferred, you know what I mean here. The idea of God putting us on hold, it sounds a bit discouraging, honestly. And Jesus' words can kind of sound like that today. Hello, you've reached the Messiah. I can't talk right now, but someone will be with you shortly. It's not particularly comforting. And yet, by all accounts, Jesus does mean these words to be of comfort today. Which has me wondering if I have perhaps misunderstood his intent here. Wondering, in fact, if I've been reading this whole passage backwards all this time. Because it sounds to me like he's trying to say there's going to be this time of absence, and he's like warning everybody about it, that will eventually be filled up with more divine presence. But I started wondering, what if in fact it's exactly the other way around this morning? What if Jesus is actually preparing the disciples not for abandonment, for being put on hold, so to speak, but what if Jesus is actually trying to cure the disciples and cure us in this moment of the very idea of abandonment in the first place? But what might that even mean? Back to my neighbor. I'm in my apartment. I'm feeling grumpy, despondent, spiritually depressed here. And my neighbor is playing the piano, The walls, of course, have zero sound barriers, so he might as well be playing right there in my room with me, and I'm annoyed. And that guy just keeps on playing. And then, strangely, without any purposeful effort on my part whatsoever, I noticed my breathing had begun to slow as he played those same chords. My body began to calm. And almost if I had had my eyes closed the whole time before this, I'm telling you, I began to notice things in my room. In my memory of it, the first thing I noticed was light coming in through the bedroom window, falling half on the floor and half on the wall there, as if sort of trying to decide which of those two needs it more. And I thought to myself, that's funny. I've never really noticed the way the light falls into this room from my window. And then I noticed this wonderful and hunger-inducing smell of bread from the bakery below my apartment, which always feels like a mean thing to do, to build an apartment right above a bakery. But in this moment, the bread was wafting in through that same window, and I noticed it. And then, again, sort of weirdly, I even noticed the spoon in my hand, the reflection it makes, its unique round shape, like a slide into a little pool there. And again, I know this sounds odd. It is a little odd. None of this is particularly profound. I just remember sitting there in this moment, rather suddenly seeing it all, being aware of it all, noticing my heart beating, and then noticing the fact that I was even there. Now, just to be clear, absolutely nothing miraculous happened that day. No revelation, no angel choir, nothing like that. Just this strange sense of presence, persistent, ordinary, absolutely unspectacular presence. And then, because this is the sort of thing I do, I began to get all theological about what was happening to me in this moment. And I found myself wondering, not entirely convinced, mind you, but seriously considering whether all of this that I was noticing might actually be closer to what Jesus means when he says, "I am with you always," than the more dramatic signs I had spent so much time searching for and never quite finding, to my regret. Which was strange, because up until that moment, and maybe you can relate, I had always been taught to search for God in the extraordinary, in burning bushes, not, you know, toasters, in an eagle flying above the sky, not the dandelion that's kind of like a weed, in Mount Rainier, which I saw every morning driving to high school, not like a folding chair in a church basement at an AA meeting. But for the first time in this moment, it was strange. I began to see, in my own somewhat naive 22-year-old way, that maybe God shows up in other things too, like a pool of sunlight on the floor, or even a metal spoon, or like a friend who texts you out of the blue, or in that middle-aged lady who works at the grocery store who looks you in the eye long enough for you to remember you exist. Or even this dog in our house, I gotta tell you, I didn't even want. But this dog who gets so excited when I get home, he sometimes pees on the floor. The point being, I wonder if something along these lines is actually Jesus' whole point today. That is, I wonder if his words are not actually about absence that eventually ends in presence down the road, but about a sort of ongoing presence that we might only actually recognize, oddly enough, when he physically is absent from us. Almost like his physical presence to them was a distraction to something. That presence, by the way, that Jesus promises will be there, he refers to as the advocate, which sounds sort of formal and churchy a little bit, but the word here in the Greek is parakleton, which means most simply, this word we translate advocate, which means most simply one who comes alongside. That's it. One who stays near. Not in bright or sparkly ways, like some divine celebrity who deigns to drop in and out on occasion, but one who is, in the most mundane of ways, already there beside you. Not flashy, but patiently, persistently, almost stubbornly present at hospice bedsides where nobody has the right words, in casseroles that contain nearly all the fruits of the Spirit as their ingredients, in teachers who keep seeing, in children who've stopped believing in themselves something worth caring about, in that friend who says, "Tell me the truth," and then waits long enough to hear it. This is the advocate. Well, one last York story for you. My sophomore year, after a bonfire devotional at night, a friend of mine, along with a bunch of us other stupid college kids, began jumping over the large bonfire for fun. Brett was athletic, is athletic, capable, and yet just as prone to slip in muddy spots as everyone else. Do you have that pit of the stomach feeling on what's coming? Which is just what he happened to do that night, slipped in a muddy spot right as he was leaping. His body went horizontal instead of vertical, and he came down hand and arm first, right in the middle of that bonfire. We pulled him out, we patted him down, and we called 911, and it was terrible. Later, when we all went to visit him at York General, they call it York General in York, it's so lovely, at York General, there were burns all over his hands and arm and all over his back, tubes in him, his hair all flattened on one side, and he was clearly in pain. And someone, one of us said, "How are you holding up?" And he said something like, "Honestly, I'm kind of scared." And then he started crying. And in that moment, you know, I'm a Bible major, I found myself tempted to become a sort of motivational speaker for Jesus here. I wanted to fix the fear, wrap it up in Romans 8, tie it with a bow or something like that. But thank God, I couldn't think of a thing to say. And apparently, neither could anyone else in that moment. So we just sat there, wondering who was going to be the first to try and force out the obligatory awkward prayer. And after a very long while, when none of us were making any eye contact whatsoever, that bandaged kid said, "Thank you." We had quite literally done nothing. No words of wisdom, no solutions, no miraculous healing. The sum total of our efforts was walking to the hospital and then sitting there. And now, years later, I often find myself wondering if that may have been one of the truest moments of ministry I've ever experienced. Love that was less a solution than just an ongoing accompaniment. Or as Jesus puts it, an advocate. Love that simply comes alongside. Which makes me wonder if Jesus' words about the advocate today are less about Jesus introducing some new form of God who's going to be coming soon, stay attentive, and more about trying to help us see that God, our advocate, has actually been present with us all along. And I wonder if the sad part about our passage today is not that Jesus leaves, but that we keep overlooking the many forms his presence continually actually takes. We want transcendence. God keeps showing up in proximity. We want escape. God keeps offering companionship. We want answers. God keeps offering pools of light and the smell of bread and music through your neighbor's wall. Jesus ends today by saying, "The world will no longer see me, but you will see me." Which is a strange thing to say in a farewell speech. But what if it's also the key to the entire passage? As if Jesus is saying, my physical presence may actually be preventing you from noticing my universal presence among you. And only by leaving will you actually be able to see me again, maybe for the first time. The comforting promise of John 14 seems to be that God has already made a home right here alongside us, such that now, whenever I hear someone practicing the piano, however imperfect, I smile. Because somewhere along the line, that sound has become sacramental to me. A reminder, a strange little anthem against despair, I guess. Not because it's beautiful, but because it is present, steady, persistent, unremarkable, like the very presence of God itself for those with eyes to see. And maybe that's the good news for us this morning. Not that God will someday arrive dramatically and fix everything lonely within us, but that God has been brushing up against our lives all along. In the dog who acts like we are the best human in the world. In the friend who will not give up on us, no matter what. In the breath moving quietly in and out of our lungs at this very moment. I will not leave you orphaned. Not because God or Jesus promises to appear exactly how we expect, but because God is already right alongside us, just like an advocate. And our one task is simply to look and see. Amen.